medicine, energy, and clean water. As IPBES reported in a separate study in 2019, unsustainable exploitation and destructive practices, including overfishing, the climate crisis, and continued extraction of fossil fuels, deforestation, and pollution are pushing 1 million species towards extinction. According to the new report, 12% of wild tree species are threatened by unsustainable logging practices, and unsustainable hunting is imperiling 1,341 wild mammal species. More than a third of marine wild fish stocks are overfished, and nearly 450 shark and ray species are identified as threatened, also largely due to over-exploitation. The recent report reveals how dangerous these trends are for humanity and calls for a number of changes to how people interact with the natural world. Overexploitation is one of the main threats to the survival of many land-based and aquatic species in the wild, said John Donaldson, co-chair of IPBES, addressing the causes of unsustainable use and whether possible reversing these trends will result in better outcomes for wild species and the people who depend on them. Sustainable use is particularly important for the security of people in the Global South, as about 70% of the world's poorest people directly depend on wild species. Nearly 2.5 billion people, about one-third of humanity, rely on fuel wood for cooking, especially in developing countries. With about 50,000 wild species used through different practices, including more than 10,000 wild species harvested directly for human food, rural people in developing countries are most at risk from unsustainable use with lack of complementary alternatives, often forcing them to further exploit wild species already at risk, said report co-author Jean-Marc Fromentin. The report highlights a number of recommendations, largely drawing from sustainable practices that have been used for generations by indigenous people around the world. For example, the IPBES pointed to the people in the Cordillera region of Luzon in the Philippines, who practice Batgan, with community members participating in monitoring the diversity of forests and planting new trees when older ones die. The report also calls for policies reducing illegal and unregulated fishing to replenish fish stocks, support for small-scale fisheries, investments in technology that would reduce waste in the manufacturing of wood products, and the recognition of land tenure for indigenous people. We live on a planet with limited resources and we must treat it that way, said Pacheco, adding, the good news is that sustainable and equitable use of wild species is possible if we address the biodiversity crisis from both a social and ecological lens. We must co-create policies with indigenous people and local communities who manage approximately 40% of terrestrial conserved areas and have developed a rich generational knowledge of these biodiversity-rich landscapes, he added. This should be part of a wider alignment of global processes and national policies and targeted local actions. Thank you.
This is A to Z. An introduction into an Islamic lifestyle. Today's lesson, respect for honor. Bismillah ar-Rahman ar-Rahim. In today's lesson, we will talk about the topic of respect for honor in the Islamic lifestyle. We know that Islam has made some boundaries for every person, and we are bound to live in our limitations or limits, the limits that are set by the Islam. For example, we have mahram, the one like mother, sister, aunt. And similarly for the girls, it is the father, it's the brother, it is the brother of father, which is known as uncle. Obviously, for the brother of mother is also known as the uncle. So these are the maharim or mahram. In front of them, it is said that a lady, she is free to go without hijab. But for those who are non-mahram, which are known as the ones who are stranger in the Islamic terminology, as we use the word na-mahram, for them, she has to wear hijab. So this hijab, this veil, is for the man and woman both. Why? Because Islam talks about respect for honor. And this respect for honor means that you should not exceed the limits that are set by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. For example, someone who has the habit of womanizing or maybe having a dirty look on the others, we can say like sister, mother, or you know the ones who are na-mahram, even the ones who are na-mahram, this person is exceeding the limits that are set by Islam. He must not exceed these limits. Islam has set these limits where Islam has given the order to women to have to put on the veil. On the other hand, it is said for the man to lower your eyes, lower your gaze, and do not look at the na-mahram and be in your limits, inshallah. Welcome back. You're listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. We were talking about the topic of respect of honor in the Islamic lifestyle. And we said that there are the limits that are set by Allah subhanahu wa ta'ala. And we must be careful when we are talking about these limits. And when we talk about the respect of honor, we have a narration from the Prophet sallallahu alaihi wasallam, where the Prophet has said that لَيْسَ مِنَّا مَنْ خَانَ مُسْلِمًا فِي أَهْلِهِ وَمَالِهِ. And he said that he is not from us whoever betrays the other Muslim's family or the property. And this is very important, because if we do not belong to Prophet, then obviously who do we belong to? Being a Muslim, when we are looking at the Prophet to basically give a favor to us, and with all those actions that we have, with all those mistakes that we have, we are looking forward for the intercession of the Prophet, and we want him to be the Shafi, or does the Shafa'a for us. Therefore, if he says that he is not from us, who, for example, is having the dirty look at the others, we can say honor, or the woman who has the habit of womanizing and who does not care, who does not respect the honor of the others, the woman of the others, then how can we go to paradise? How can we make ourselves a good person? How can we go towards the perfection? Whereas Islam has come to take us towards the perfection. Therefore, it is necessary, according to the Islamic lifestyle, if you want to have an Islamic lifestyle, if you want to become a role model, therefore, try to have the respect for other. And this is what Islam teaches us for. Thanks for listening. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh. Thanks for listening to A to Z from IRB English Radio. For more information, visit our website at parstoday.com/EN Call of Islam page. Till another episode, God bless you all. Wassalamu alaikum wa rahmatullahi wa barakatuh.
Comes from the heart of beautiful Iran. IRIB English Radio.
The wildfires in Greece, Turkey, the United States.
Palestinian prisoners in Israeli jails continue to engage in hunger strikes.
Kim Yo-jong, the powerful sister of North Korean leader.
On the news line.
The United Nations has warned the Israeli regime against forcible mass eviction of over 1,000 Palestinians from their homes in the Masafer Yatta area of the occupied West Bank.
Evictions that lead to displacement, if enforced, amount to forced deportation and a grave breach of the forced Geneva Convention, and therefore constitute a war crime.
The United Nations Office for the Coordination of Humanitarian Affairs added that the international humanitarian law imposes an absolute prohibition on the forcible transfer of civilians from or within the occupied Palestinian territories, and that Israeli authorities must put an end to all coercive measures, including planned evictions, demolitions, and military training in it.
Well, the Palestinians have been periodically rising up against this ongoing slow-motion Zionist genocide. It's been going on now. The Palestinians have been resisting this genocide for more than a century since it began, when these settlers started swarming into Palestine against the wishes of the Palestinian people. And so that struggle will, of course, continue. And there will be continuing protests. There are basically ongoing peaceful protests in Palestine. And every now and then, the uprising becomes more of a military nature. And then, of course, the Zionists respond in kind, and all kinds of blood is shed. At the end of the day, the Zionists are continuing their slow-motion genocide, but it isn't happening fast enough to save them. In the long run, the Zionist entity is doomed because it hasn't been able to get the actual acquiescence of the Palestinians, first and foremost, and then secondarily, the people of the region.
A ruling by the Israeli Supreme Court on May 4th allowed for the mass eviction of Palestinians in the area. The Israeli military has designated part of the area as a closed military zone for training, and the regime has sought to remove the communities on this basis. The European ambassador to the occupied Palestinian territories has warned against Israel's planned evictions.
If mass evictions and forcible transfer were to be the case, that would be the biggest forcible transfer for decades.
The official added that the EU hopes that upcoming visits of US President Joe Biden to Israel would put pressure on Israel to fulfill its obligations to protect civilians.
The US could stop Israel from all of its crimes if it turned and chose that path, but it won't. And the reason, of course, is that there's a lot of Zionist power here in the United States, including in the Biden administration. And they're sending a message by saying, even when Biden goes to the Middle East, and it would be in his interest and the American interest to have the Israelis modify their behavior, they won't do it. They don't need to do it. They're thumbing their nose at the world. And the Zionists have a long track record of things like this. They never compromise. They never try to go the extra mile to be reasonable.
Although the United States has called on the Israeli regime to stop its settlement drive, but in effect it has supported the regime in its crimes against Palestinians. U.S. officials have repeatedly hailed Washington's unwavering support for the regime. They have also turned a deaf ear to growing cries from various international organizations regarding the regime's atrocities. The United States has also vetoed numerous resolutions in the UN Security Council that criticize the regime.
Amid ongoing diplomatic efforts to revive the Joint Comprehensive Plan of Action, or the JCPOA, the U.S. has introduced fresh sanctions against Iran. Washington claims the measures target an international network of individuals and entities that allegedly facilitated the sale of Iranian petroleum and petrochemical products to East Asia. The move comes ahead of President Biden's visit to the region next week. Last week, Iran held high-stake diplomatic talks in the Qatari capital, Doha, to restore the JCPOA, with the EU coordinator, Enrique Mora, shuttling between Iran's top negotiator, Ali Bagherikani, and Robert Malley, the U.S. special envoy for Iran. Following the talks, Iran's foreign minister, Hossein Amir Abdollahian, rejected claims made by U.S. officials about new demands raised by the Iranian delegation in the Doha talks, saying the Islamic Republic's requests are in line with the 2015 accord. He said, contrary to U.S. media claims, Tehran put forward no excessive demands that goes beyond the framework of the JCPOA.
برخلاف برخی ادعاهای رسانه‌ای طرف آمریکایی ما هیچ گونه مطالبه زیاده خواهانه ای نداریم هیچ گونه مطالبه فرابرجامی مورد ادعای آمریکا را نداریم مطالبات ما کاملا در چارچوب توافق سال 2015 است.
امیر عبداللهیان's remarks came in response to U.S. special envoy for Iran Robert Malley, claimed that Tehran came up with new demands at the Doha talks. The U.S. State Department spokesman, Ned Price, echoed Malley's remarks, claiming that Iran has consistently introduced extraneous demands, demands that, or issues that, go beyond the four walls of the JCPOA. Iran is pursuing the JCPOA talks, while Israel has been sounding the alarm about Iran, its regional influence, and its alleged efforts of weaponizing its nuclear program.
And Israel is far from wanting the interests of the countries of the region. On the other hand, we see that the countries in the region like Iran, Saudi Arabia, Egypt, and Jordan, they're talking to each other, they're meeting in Baghdad. They've met several times in Arab and Middle Eastern capitals. So they are capable of sorting out their problems. And therefore, any relationship with Israel would be detrimental and against the interest of the countries of the Middle East.
Meanwhile, a top Iranian security official has warned against forming alliances with Israel, saying that such moves endanger the security of the region. Secretary of Iran's Supreme National Security Council, Ali Shamkhani, says that any alliance with the Israeli regime, even of a non-security and non-military nature, will pose serious threats to the stability and security of the Middle East region. Shamkhani made the remarks in a meeting with the visiting Qatari Deputy Prime Minister and Minister of Foreign Affairs, Sheikh Mohammed bin Abdul Rahman Al Thani, in Tehran. He underlined the emphasis on neighboring countries in the Islamic Republic's foreign policy, asserting that Tehran's coherent policy towards its neighbors is to expand all-out and strategic relations on the principle of good neighborliness. Separately, Shamkhani warned that the Islamic Republic opposes any move that changes regional geopolitics. This was in reference to a so-called Arab NATO, a plan that was a non-starter when it was introduced by the former U.S. President Donald Trump. This military regional alliance was due to Israel and the U.S. sounding the alarm over the perceived threat coming from Iran.
The Iranophobia is something very natural to happen in the West because it is one of the U.S. tools against a country like Iran, like Russia, who refused to submit to the U.S. hegemony.
Iran has rejected such a notion and has said that through regional cooperation, security can be established. Iran believes that Israel and the presence of foreign forces are the source of instability. The UK Prime Minister fought as hard as he could, but he finally gave in. Boris Johnson has resigned as the Conservative Party leader. This will pave the way for a successor to replace him as a British Prime Minister, after over 50 of his ministers quit the government. He will, however, continue as Prime Minister until autumn. A Tory leadership race will take place this summer, and the winner will replace Johnson by October. Boris Johnson's premiership plunged into crisis following the dramatic resignations of Chancellor Rishi Sunak and the Health Secretary Sajid Javid. Javid, who served as the Secretary of State for Health and Social Care, made reference to Johnson's failed leadership as the reason for quitting his post.
And now this week again, we have reason to question the truth and integrity of what we've all been told. And at some point, we have to conclude that enough is enough. Yeah. I believe that point is now.
Further resignations have followed, with the education ministers, Will Quince and Robin Walker, and ministerial aide Laura Trott quitting.
He had scandal after scandal, miscalculation after miscalculation. He's lost the confidence of, I assume, the country, going by the recent by-election results. And more recently, he's lost the confidence of many senior members of his government, with over 40 of them now resigning.
Johnson was under mounting pressure after apologizing for appointing MP Christopher Pincher to a role involved in offering pastoral care to his party, even after being briefed that the politician had been the subject of complaints about sexual misconduct.
He knew the accused minister had previously committed predatory behaviour, but he promoted him to a position of power anyway. Why?
They're looking at the future. They're looking at the next Conservative government being returned in 2024. I believe they feel that won't happen with Boris Johnson at the helm. Therefore, people are jockeying for position. The knives are out. It's a Caesar and Brutus type political ending of his career.
Prime Minister Boris Johnson and the scandals that surrounded him drowned his political life, and he found himself to have fallen out of favor with the general public in the UK. Prior to his resignation, a snap YouGov poll had found that 69% of Britons thought that Johnson should step down as Prime Minister. The timing of his resignation could not be any worse. The UK is experiencing a cost of living crisis like no other time in its history. Many Britons are struggling to cope with rising fuel and food prices. Economists say that the country is now heading for a sharp slowdown or possibly a recession.
He is, for his own political, selfish purposes, been running this country's economy into the ground, and worse, far worse, he has been threatening a peace process. That's all I've got to say.
And things will get much, much worse before the next general election. And I think regardless of who wins that election, we will continue to see an economic crisis.
Now with a new administration set to take the helm in September or in early October, the real concern for the UK is how it will cope with the economic crisis until then. This is not to dismiss the fact that there are no guarantees that the new administration will be able to deal with the economic onslaught that will be piled on it.
I'm sickened myself and furious about that.
The International Federation of Journalists, or IFJ, says the Federation will be a partner in the lawsuit filed against the Israeli occupation in the International Criminal Court. A member of the executive board of the Federation says the move came after the Palestinian Journalist Syndicate succeeded in persuading the Federation to file a lawsuit against Israel in the International Criminal Court. IFJ stated that the filing comes in light of the Israeli aggression against Palestinian journalists and people. Earlier, the Journalist Syndicate had said that it succeeded in exposing Israel's acts of aggression against media professionals and the Palestinian people. The circumstances of Shirin Abu Akleh's killing on May the 11th have been investigated by several international organizations. All concluded that it was a bullet fired from an Israeli rifle that killed the Al Jazeera correspondent and injured her fellow journalists as they covered an Israeli raid in Jenin. Multiple witnesses also agreed with the probes, stating that Israeli forces shot the veteran Palestinian reporter. Meanwhile, Al Jazeera and its host country Qatar pointed the finger at Israel from the outset. But the question is, will there and can there be accountability for the crimes committed by Israel?
And the absence of punishment shows hypocrisy, double standards, and deception and lies. So this is an opportunity for journalists to present all of the best documented evidence, research, discovery that they've done about crimes against humanity that the Israeli apartheid regime has committed. And the more international they go, the louder they go, the more they invite other countries to be participants, to join the lawsuit against Israel, the more you're building international consensus in support of the people who have been violated, dehumanized, killed, robbed, or in other way injured by this grotesque apartheid Israeli policy and agenda of genocide, bigotry, and destruction. So it's a very essential step, and I'm glad they're taking it.
Earlier this month, Palestinian officials handed over to U.S. forensic experts the bullet that killed Abu Akleh. But despite all the evidence pointing fingers towards Israel, the U.S. said it could not reach a definitive conclusion on the origin of the bullet. Meanwhile, Abu Akleh's family have expressed their anger over the U.S.'s disregard for what several courts and rights organizations have stated and its failure to accept that its ally has murdered a journalist in broad daylight. The International Federation of Journalists, or IFJ, says that Israel was guilty of the crime and expressed deep disturbance over Israel's failure to conduct a probe into Palestinian journalist Abu Akleh's killing. The U.S., on the other hand, has not condemned this act, yet aside from saying there needs to be an independent investigation, raising questions about whether the U.S. is seeking the truth or to protect its ally.
Well, absolutely, the U.S. is guilty of supporting the regime. The U.S. is guilty from enabling the regime to engage in war crimes and crimes against humanity. The U.S. has been guilty of stealing money from the American people and giving it to the Israeli apartheid regime and giving them weapons and, in fact, looking the other way when Israel had developed nuclear weapons. But that's another story. But Israel's crimes and abuses against the Palestinians, against the Syrians, against Lebanon, against all sorts of countries and nations and peoples, the U.S. is the partner in crime that is responsible. And if the U.S. does not hold a moral standard and a very clear objectivity and a dedication to truth and justice, then the U.S. is showing that it has no dedication to truth and justice, but instead has a dedication to lies and crime.
The murder of Abu Akleh, which sparked global outrage, only adds to Israel's long list of atrocities against Palestinians. But that fury has yet to translate into any concrete measures, particularly by international bodies such as the UN Security Council. So far, several international organizations have provided evidence of Israel's brutality against Palestinians. UN resolutions have also been passed against Israel. Yet no one, including the United Nations Security Council, has used any of its tools to ensure its resolutions. Meanwhile, the International Criminal Court has ruled that it has a mandate to investigate the occupied territories and has accepted the Palestinians after they were granted non-member observer status at the UN. This comes despite Palestinians' inability to join the ICC, as Israel is not a member and Palestinians do not qualify as a sovereign state.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم. يا أيها المزمل قم الليل إلا قليلا نصفه
أو انقص منه قليلا أو زد عليه ورتل القرآن ترتيلا.
قد دعوتك ربي بقرآنك جنبني حراني.
Let's recite the Quran.
ناجيتك أرجو غفرانك يا من ينجينا إحسانك ودعوتك ربي بقرآنك.
أعوذ بالله من الشيطان الرجيم بسم الله الرحمن الرحيم الحمد لله رب العالمين وصلى الله على محمد وآله الطاهرين
اللهم صل على محمد وآل محمد عجل فرجهم
Assalamu alaikum and welcome to Let's Recite the Quran Kareem, a series of Quranic sessions held by IRIB English Radio in cooperation with Sevier International Schools Network. This is Habibullah Fasizadeh.
A message from the sky, a mercy for mankind. If you lose your way, we'll always be your guide. Far greater than this world, move mountains with its words. Fixed every part of me, and put my heart at ease. And Allah knows, words heal the soul. Most beautiful of miracles. The more you read, the more you feel Allah's love with every beat.
So, brothers and sisters, thank you so much for joining us. Now, we are going to, inshallah, continue our Quranic sessions. Now, listen to the rule idgham. When it comes to tajweed rules, idgham means to merge one letter to other letter. For example, you have the letter dal, you merge it with the letter ta. Yeah. Okay, so dal will be changed to
ta.
Ta. Ta. We have this kind of idgham as well. We have idgham with noon, saakin, and tanween. We have idgham with the other letters. We have two types of idgham. Okay, inshallah, we'll study them. So now we are doing idgham with noon, saakin, and tanween. Okay, it means we change or we merge the noon saakin or tanween into other letters. What are those letters? Ye, ra, ma, la, wa, na. Ya, ra, ma, loon. These six letters. That is the rule idgham. It is the mixing or entering of a saakin letter into a mutaharrik letter following it. So that they become a single mushaddad letter, okay? Sometimes we have meme, we have another meme. You merge them together. Do you remember we studied something called tashdeed?
Yes.
Tashdeed.
Yes.
A baby W.
Yes.
Yeah?
Yes.
Okay. Or like the front part of the letter seen or sheen, yes?
Yes.
So mushaddad. That mushaddad is the effect or the, we say the influence of what? Merging.
Yes.
Merging. We have in, na. Hamza, noon saakin, plus noon maftuh, mm-hmm. with fatha. Yeah. We merge them together. In, na. We put a tashdeed. It means they have been merged into one another. Okay? They have been inserted. Or for example, we have tab, bat, ta, ba, ba, ta. Four letters, yes? Tab, bat. If you look at the Quran, it's written three letters are there. Ta, ba, ta. Well, we have four letters. Tab, bat. Okay? Ta, ba, ba, ta. But ba with ba. The first ba is saakin, the second ba is mutaharrik. So this saakin letter is merged into the mutaharrik letter. Okay? So we have here mushaddad or mushaddad letters, okay? Or tashdeed we have, it has been used, okay? This is also called idgham. I told you, yes? That we have idgham with tanween or noon saakin. We have idgham with other letters. Okay? Tabbat. For example, amma yatasa'alun. Amma yatasa'alun. Wadduha.
Mimma.
Yeah. Mimma. Okay? Mimma is min ma. Noon saakin there. It has been merged with mim yarmalun. Okay, noon saakin merged with mim yarmalun. Mimma. Look. So now remember that whenever, okay, it is a very important point. Whenever you merge in yarmalun, in idgham rule, okay? Whenever you merge tanween or noon saakin into one of the yarmalun letters, so the tanween or noon saakin will get the sound of one of those six letters. All right?
Yes.
So if you merge tanween or noon saakin with the letter ye, So the tanween or nun sakin will be changed to a sound like the letter
ye.
For example, min, yeah, you have ya after min. How do you merge them?
Me.
Me. Look, the nun is changed to ye. Me.
May.
Me. Okay? The nun has been sacrificed here, actually, okay? And the ya has been doubled.
Yes.
Me. What about wow?
Isn't it may?
Mil.
May, me, whatever, muy, whatever. You have. I'm just giving you an example.
Why okay? Will be, vowel will become mau.
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 Miu. Okay, whatever. So, or for example, ra. Mir. Min rabbihim. Okay?
Mir
rabbihim it is.
Yes.
Next one, lam. Man lahum, for example.
Mallahum.
Mallahum. Okay? Or for example, noon. Inna.
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 Yes.
Alright?
Yes.
So,
yes.
Alhamdulillah, it's easy then.
Alhamdulillah. فأتاه الوحي فأشرق اقرأ اقرأ
Let's recite the Quran.
اقرأ باسم ربك الذي خلق.
But there are some exceptions that we have tanween, we have nun sakin, okay, but still we do not apply the rule idgham. That I will tell you those exceptions, okay? Four exceptions are there, okay, that we do not apply the rule idgham. Instead, we apply the rule idhar. For example, the word, four words are there in the Quran. Sinwan, Qinwan, Bunyan, Dunya. Sinwan, Qinwan, Bunyan,
Dunya.
Sinwan, Sinwan, wow. Sin, Nunisakin, after Nunisakin, wow. It had to be Siwan. When we say Siwan, the meaning completely changes. It doesn't give the meaning of Sinwan. It has another meaning.
So why you didn't put the meaning of Sinwan to that?
No. If we change it, if we apply the rule Idgham, it will be changed, okay? So the other words, no, it will not be changed. It's still understandable, okay? But these words, these four exceptions, okay?
Yes.
So we do not apply the rule Idgham.
Only four words?
Yeah, these four words are exceptions,
Sinwan.
Okay?
Sinwan.
Sin, wan, with idgham, okay? With idgham,
yes.
With the irbun letters. We have sad, nun, sakin, wow. Siwan, no. Sinwan. Ilhar, sinwan. Like the throat letters, okay?
Yes.
Sinwan, that's it. Qinwan. Qinwan.
Qinwan.
Okay?
Bunyan.
Nun, sakin, yeah. Nun, sakin, plus, wow.
Wow.
Qiwan.
Yes.
It has to be Qinwan. It's an exception. Okay?
Yes.
Next one. Bun.
Yan.
Yan. Nun sakin plus?
Yeah.
Merge them together.
Bunyan.
Bunyan. It has another meaning. It doesn't have that meaning of bunyan. So, bunyan. It is an exceptional word. Okay? Bunyan. Sinwan. Qinwan. Bunyan. And the last word?
Dunya.
Dun, Nunisakin, ya. How do you merge them?
Dunya.
Dunya. Dunya doesn't have the meaning of dunya.
Yes.
Okay? If you recite the Quran, okay? For example, fi dunya wal akhirah, okay? You say, fi dunya wal akhirah. The Arab will not understand this as the meaning of dunya.
First.
Do you understand this?
No.
He's an Arab, but he doesn't understand that. Yes? Yeah.
When you say duya, it doesn't have a meaning. So.
Yeah, maybe it doesn't have a meaning, or it has a meaning, not the meaning we have to, like, say that. Okay. Yeah, it has a meaning. So these four words are there, okay, that we do not apply the rule idgham. Can you repeat the words?
Sinwan,
Qinwan,
Bunyan,
Dunya. Four words. Okay, Dunya, Bunyan.
Qinwan
and
Sinwan.
Okay, Sinwan, Qinwan, Bunyan, and
Dunya.
These are verbs. Okay, let's go to types of idgham, okay? Now we alhamdulillah understood what is idgham, okay? Merging one letter to another letter. One sakin letter to a mutaharik letter. What is that sakin letter? In nun sakin and tanween, that sakin letter is the nun sakin or tanween?
Yes.
Tanween is also a nun sakin.
Yeah.
So we merge this nun sakin or that tanween, which is actually nun sakin. We merge this sakin letter into a mutaharik letter. Yeah, what is that mutaharik letter? One of those six letters. Ya, ra, ma, la, wa, na. Yarmalun. So what does idgham mean and the tajweed rules and nun sakin and tanween rules? It means merging the sakin letter, which is nun sakin or tanween, into
mutaharrik,
a mutaharrik letter, which is ya, ra, ma, la, wa, na. Easy.
Yes.
Did you learn it?
Yes.
Allahumma
salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil faraj.
Okay. Now we have two types of idgham. Remember, okay, that let me tell you a rule that I just told you, okay, before idgham. That's about ghunna. Do you know ghunna?
Nasal sound.
Nasal sound. Ghunna is a nasal sound. What does it mean? It means huge. Kind of close your mouth and try to air out, okay, or produce the sound with your nose. So you understood the ghunna sound, okay? That's a nasal sound. Since we use ghunna rule, okay, or this nasal sound, okay, in idgham, based on this rule, we have two types of idgham, okay? One idgham with ghunna, another idgham is with out ghunna.
Yes.
Idgham with ghunna, idgham
without
ghunna. So, with four of the letters, we apply the rule idgham with ghunna. It means we merge the letters and also we produce a nasal sound with a long nasal sound, okay? Four letters are there. From yarmalun, four of them. What letters do you know?
Waw, nun, ya, re.
Meme. Right, three of them you were right. That's good. Ya, meem,
noon,
and
wow.
So, you can say, you can make a word. Yanmu or yamun.
Yeah, yamun.
Yamun. Yarmalun, yamun. Okay? So, these four letters are there that you apply the rule idgham bat with ghunna. What is with ghunna?
Nasal sound. I'll tell
you. Nasal sound, okay?
Yes.
I'll tell you how you apply it. And two other letters are there, okay? The rest of the letters. What are the rest of the letters? The two rest.
Lam.
Lam and
ra.
Ra. Lam and ra. You can say ral or rel, whatever. Lar, whatever, okay? Make a word, okay, to remember. Yes. So with these two letters, okay, we apply the rule idgham bat without unna, without a nasal sound, okay? Inshallah, after taking a break, we'll come back and we'll apply. I mean, we will talk about it, how to produce that nasal sound with idgham, okay? That ghunna without idgham without ghunna, sorry. And inshallah, we'll go through the surah An-Nazi'at and Nazi'at Al-Ghashiyah, inshallah, and apply the rule, okay?
Inshallah.
Thanks to IRIB English Radio and also Sevier International Schools Network. See you, inshallah.
Allahumma salli ala Muhammad wa ali Muhammad wa ajil farajan.
Let's recite the Quran, a joint production of IRIB English Radio and Sevier International Schools.
وصفاته نبع الهدى نلقى الجنان بحبه لن تستقيم حياتنا إلا به هو القرآن والفرقان إليه تنصت الأكوان وفيه تعطر الآذان والقرآن.
Cultural news. Social news. Scientific news. Artistic news. With the light.
A zoo in Mexico City celebrates the birthday of two very special residents, bringing cheers and excitement to visitors. Chinese pandas Xin Xin and Xuan Xuan have turned 35 and 33, becoming the oldest pandas in human captivity. China gifted their ancestors to Mexico back in 1975 to boost the relationships between the two countries. Later on, and thanks to the hard work of caretaker teams, 8 cubs were born from the parents. Zoo officials say for them, learning the A to Z of panda care was a long journey.
The pandas living in Chapultepec, Xuan Xuan and Xin Xin, turned 35 and 33 years old, respectively. When their parents arrived, we didn't know much about pandas, so vets and biologists had to follow recommendations from those who took care of giant pandas in the People's Republic of China. From then on, we evolved. We found new and better diets and daily care practices such as vaccine administration or parasite removal. Then they started to breed, which was quite a success since it was the first panda that was born and which survived named Toy.
The birthday celebration has coincided with the zoo's 99th foundation anniversary. A panda's normal lifespan is estimated at about 15 to 20 years for those out in nature and about 30 years for the ones in human care. But the good news is, despite their old age, Xuan Xuan and Xin Xin are in perfectly good shape. A goat in the Pakistani city of Karachi has made the headlines for its not-so-ordinary looks. The animal owns strikingly long ears. Simba was only born last month and his ears have already reached the length of 54 centimeters. The goat's breeder, Muhammad Hassan Narejo, says he has approached Guinness World Records to see if Simba can be included as the greatest of all time, or the goat, for this peculiar feature. The kid is in the center of attention, so he receives all sorts of help to live a smoother life. This includes a special harness for his ears and daily religious rituals to wish him good health. The breeder says that by promoting Simba's image, he is trying to introduce Pakistan as a major goat breeding nation.
The sky is the limit for wind sports in Iraq's Kurdistan region as members of the paragliding team launched into the sunset. Tourists have also come to watch team members bravely run towards the edge of the cliff of Mount Asmar. They usually take off facing the west to catch the sunset and then glide down towards the gray green meadows. The windy landscape around Iraq's northeastern city of Sulaymaniyah is a hot spot for paragliding. Participants of the sport say it requires a lot of physical strength and mental concentration. Some say their favorite aspect of the activity is the intense silence when flying high above the ground. There are many big restaurants with Michelin stars awarded based on their quality. But you will be amazed to know that an eatery located in a tiny village in Greenland also has this badge of honor, making it the world's most remote Michelin-starred restaurant. This eatery in the village, which is home to only 53 people, serves you what it gets from its immediate surroundings. Looking out over the chilly North Atlantic, customers taste a variety of local products, ranging from whale skin to an Arctic bird whose entire wing, including feathers, is on the plate. The restaurant is so remote that you can only reach there by boat through floating icebergs. The head chef says he forages for wild berries, flowers, and herbs every day since the menu largely includes local flavors. young British artist has found an incredible way to create art using not pen or paper, but typewriter. Symbols and letters are turned into complex drawings by this 25-year-old's adept fingers, gaining him attention online. London-based James Cook, who studied architecture, used to draw portraits. But that all changed when he discovered his now signature tool, the typewriter, in 2014. He says the idea came to his mind when he came across Paul Smith, an artist from the 1920s, who produced similar work. Initially, Cook thought it impossible, but he gave it a try. Now, after 8 years, he can draw complex images from Hollywood star Tom Hanks to the London Eye or the Millennium Bell. But while his works appear flawless to viewers, Cook says it never gets any easier and that it's always a challenge for him.
There's something really satisfying about kind of using this sort of limited palette of... You basically have about 44 keys on a typewriter on average. So you've got to kind of puzzle piece those letters, numbers, punctuation marks together to make a drawing.
Recently, online interest has encouraged Cook to pursue his passion. People donate their typewriters to Cook, who gives these machines a second life. He now has a collection of more than 40 typewriters dating from the early 20s.
The Light is a bulletin in which we bring you a lot of interesting news in different fields like animals' life, cultural events, funny trending news, and more from every corner of the world.
Colombia's long hunt for a fabled Spanish ship, San Jose Galleon, that sank centuries ago, comes to an end. But the mission leads to two more nearby shipwrecks filled with treasures.
We have found two additional ships, one ship that is from the colonial period and another that, from the point of view of preliminary analysis, corresponds to the Republican period of our history. We also have related vessels, around a dozen similar boats, that will be located by our Navy.
The colonial-era vessels were found near Colombia's Caribbean port of Cartagena. A remotely operated vehicle reached 900 meters beneath to capture the shipwrecks and treasures inside them. San Jose Galleon sank in a deadly battle against English warships in 1708, taking with it billions in treasure. The Colombian president says the findings will be preserved and protected until extraction is done completely. The riches will then be displayed in museums.
Colombian scientists managed to reproduce an endangered species of frog, bringing it back from the brink of extinction. The scientists were able to reproduce 29 specimens of Lehman's poison frog after years of investigations and experiments using a lab built specifically for this species. They have released the frogs into the Colombian Pacific region with the hope of starting its repopulation.
We observe how the frogs adapt to this ecosystem, which is theirs, but it is a constant monitoring. And the idea is that of these first 29 frogs at the moment, there are many more little frogs, and now we can tell the world that they are not in danger of extinction.
The scientists, however, warn that this particular species of frog is very difficult to reproduce or maintain under human care. They are also worried about the illegal trade of the frogs, which has already played a key role in pushing the rare species towards extinction. Colombia is home to over 700 frog species, more than any other country in the world except Brazil.
A
in Brazil, a 100-year-old man has broken the world record for the longest spell working at a single company. Walter Orthman has entered the Guinness World Record books for working at the same fabric company for an astonishing period of 84 years. He started on the factory floor before moving into administration and later on into the sales management. Despite his extraordinary accomplishment, Orthman's advice for those looking for a long and fulfilling professional life is surprisingly routine.
You have to like to work. I started to work with that willingness and fighting spirit. You also have to start working on something you like to do. You can't just do any job to say that you're working. That doesn't work. You're not going to be able to stand it. You have to look for a job that you like to do. And there, you won't even feel the time passing. That's what happened with me. I started working here, and I liked it. I worked my way up from point to point until I got to the position I'm in today.
Orthman says his secret to a long life and breaking the record is having a healthy lifestyle and staying away from junk food. He says he avoids sugar and salt as much as possible and tries to keep a diet that is healthy for the mind and soul. In order to stay sharp, Orthman says he does stretches and maintains physical activity. With soaring fuel prices, the importance of solar-powered vehicles is on the rise. Now a Kashmiri math teacher has gone viral for creating a car powered by solar energy. The car, which is fully covered with solar panels, uses sunlight to charge its battery. The vehicle also has a braking system that regenerates power to its batteries. The inventor of the car, Bilal Ahmed, says he has spent about $19,000 for his project and has not used external funds.
It was my dream to invent a solar car for the people of Kashmir. It took me 13 years to complete my dream. I'm thankful to the Almighty I succeeded in this project.
Bilal says he has built the car manually and without any automation. He hopes to put his fully automatic car into mass production to create jobs for local people.
Just like humans and animals, plants get sick too. But what do you do with an ill plant? An Indian man has found an answer to that. He has opened an emergency room only for plants in Amritsar, a city in India's Punjab state. A tax officer and his wife have set up a Pushpa tree and plant hospital. In Pushpa, they have expert biologists and tree lovers on hand to provide the so-called sick patients with their essential nutrients. The clinic aims to treat any and every disease and even has an emergency vehicle on call for unhealthy trees around the city. The officer's wife says, just as we humans bleed, breathe, and need cures, plants also bleed, breathe, and need cures.
We provide approximately 32 various services for plants and trees, like if there's a nail in the tree, how to take out that nail. Deep poisoning of the trees. Yes, you heard it right. There are people who poison the trees. Again, if the tree is not bearing fruits, there's an attack of mealybugs or another insects. That's also cured here. If the trees or plants are dying and you're unable to take care of them, even that problem is sorted out.
Only a month into the hospital's operation, Rohit Mehra and his team of 20 volunteers have already received more than 300 queries. The hospital is also completely free of charge.
www.parstoday.com/en. What you heard was an IRIB English radio program. This is IRIB English Radio. Coming up is the news.